we'll open, for those who are late, we have already tapped in the bills at the bottom of the page, starting with House Bill 2722, so that is accomplished. But I am going to say that we have a lot of work to do today, and we have a lot of work to do next week. And I've tapped in probably more bills than we can really take care of next week. So I will ask you members to, of course, ask questions as needed, but to please stay focused on the bill, and so that we can really keep this moving. We'll try to get through as many as we can. I appreciate the work that's gone into preparing these bills, and so if we can cooperate, we can get a lot done. So at this, and I will start the meeting at 8, as long as we have a quorum. And most of these are going to be hearing and work session meetings. And if we're not here at 8, and I realize that some of you have other committees and it's a problem, but it delays the meeting because we have to have a quorum. So I'll appreciate that prompt opening. So, and we will go till 10:30. I'm avoiding any late meetings or 7 a.m. meetings if we can just stay on target here in our meetings, and we'll go from 8 till 10:30, and hopefully our sessions won't start till 10:30, and that way we don't want to miss session, but possibly we could get excused from the first part of session if we have to on Tuesday or Thursday next week. Then we'll revert back to our 8:10 or 8:30 to 10. We'll see how many bills we have, and we'll announce that next week so that you can plan your schedule accordingly. All right. At this point, we're going to go into a work session on House Bill 3453. We have had hearing on this bill before. And Pat, do you wish to talk about it a little bit?
Madam Chair and committee members, 3453 is a bill that you last heard on March the 18th. It is before you today for a work session. It would decrease the audit responsibilities of the Secretary of State for certain boards. These are the boards that were part of the pilot program through legislation that was adopted in 1997. John Latimer from the Auditor's Office is here if you have any questions related to this bill.
All right, thank you. John, would you like to come up, and perhaps it would be good if you were to comment on this before we proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Latimer, Director of the Audits Division, and with me today, Sharon Walker, who's a CPA and Deputy Director. What I'd like to do is do a little quick history of this bill, and then Sharon can talk about a little bit about the cost of auditing as it's described in the legislation that was adopted in 1997. I think it's important to understand that one of the things that happened with this bill as it was being passed, that's Senate Bill 546 last session, was that there was no fiscal impact written on it. It was the bill was amended at the very last minute in the session. And so I'm doubly culpable in this because I was legislative fiscal officer and we missed it. And then I was audit division director and we missed it. So, the amendment was adopted at the very last minute of the session, and so nobody did a fiscal impact. During the interim, we worked with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and Legislative Fiscal Office trying to come up with a way to do these audits that wouldn't take all the resources that these small boards have and still try to meet the letter of the law. So we worked with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, had several meetings with them, and we made a presentation in April of 1998 to the audit committee, and the audit committee agreed to the process we would follow, and that was for us to contract a financial audit, and we did that, and to have the boards do a self-reporting on the performance requirements that are in that were in Senate Bill 546. And so we did all of that. We ran into some problems along the way. The boards didn't have complete financial statements, so those had to be created before they could be audited. And then when we finished the audit, the audit firm, as you've seen, supplied some management letters to the boards, and they supplied us with the performance of reports, and we reviewed those. I think the important thing to understand is that this process that we followed cost the board, the five boards together, about $26,000. So, about $26,000. So that's a little over $5,000 apiece.
Was that for the financial?
For the financial compliance audit that was done by Marina McCoy, a private CPA firm.
And I think that we have...
It also included compiling the other reports, printing them, and distributing them to you folks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when we talked to the audit committee, what we indicate to them was that those audits, if were done as the legislation prescribed, there was very great detail in the legislation for performance, that it would probably have cost each board somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 each to accomplish those, and that would be whether we did it or whether a outside CPA firm did the audit. There's also one other thing that I'd like to bring to your attention, that there is a Senate bill that now creates Senate Bill 1127 that now does this same thing for 22 licensing boards. It's Senator Bryan's bill, and they have taken out this a very long involved audit process. They will still be audited, but not to the extent that Senate Bill 546 required. What I'd like to do is have Sharon describe for you why the bill, the Senate Bill 546, or the current law, requires these very expensive audits, why they're so expensive.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sharon Walker. I'm Deputy Director with the Audits Division. When I talked with you previously, I don't think that I described maybe clearly enough what it was that made these audit requirements so expensive. And so attached to our copy of the testimony is Attachment A, and that outlines what the audit requirements are. From an auditor's perspective, whenever we perform an audit, what we're doing is providing assurance or giving an opinion on certain statements or representations. And in the testimony, I have a couple of examples of what makes these audit requirements so expensive. And under the requirement for the financial audit, it requires explanation of any revenue increase above the 95-97 budget levels, explanation of how that revenue increase, if any, was spent, determination of whether or not the board followed generally accepted accounting principles. Well, the last item is fairly easy to do because an audit, a financial statement audit, typically determines whether or not generally accepted accounting principles are being followed. And then the first item, explanation of any revenue increase, how much of that increase was caused by more licenses being issued, that's fairly easy for an auditor to determine by comparing the number of licenses issued in each period. The second item under the financial audit requirements is a little bit more difficult to nail down, explanation of how the revenue increase was spent, because then you have to come to some kind of agreement on criteria. How do you determine how much of each expenditure came from old dollars versus new dollars? How do you apply revenue increases to either new specific purchases, or do they go across the board to everything that was purchased during the period? It gets a little bit more difficult, and therefore the auditor spends more time and the audit becomes more expensive in trying to meet that criteria to provide that information. For the performance audit, what makes the performance audit requirements expensive is, and the first item under the performance audit, it says that the audit's to include whether the board has adequately and effectively discharged its legal responsibilities in, and then it lists several different areas. Determining whether or not the board has complied with its legal requirements is fairly easy. It's required to provide consumer information. Does it provide consumer information? But determining whether or not that has been adequately and effectively provided becomes much more difficult to measure. And the audit profession is somewhat conservative, and so an auditor would spend more time developing criteria, what would be effective and adequate, and what measures apply, what standards should be considered. And so, therefore, because of the longer time it takes to develop those standards, those measures, and to come to some common agreement on this is how we're going to measure your performance, it makes the audit much more expensive than just determining did they carry out their legal responsibilities. That's a compliance audit. Just determining if they did the duties is a compliance feature, and that's something that auditors typically look at. Did you do the things that are significant, that you're required to do, the most important responsibilities that are in the law? If it's changing that requirement to did they adequately and effectively carry out those responsibilities, it makes that audit much more expensive than a compliance audit.
Thank you. That was a good explanation. Justin Montgomery.
Thank you. I'd like to ask John Latimer a couple questions.
Yes.
Three of them maybe.
All right.
First of all, is this a different audit, Ms. Latimer, than we do with other boards, clinical social workers, and everything? It's more stringent type audit that we're asking?
Madam Chair, Representative Montgomery, yes, indeed it is.
That's, thank you. And then my next question is why? Why don't we just do them all the same? In your opinion, should we do that or can we do that? I don't want to push on too much of this, but I guess it did. Sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative Montgomery, I think that's a policy choice that this committee is wrestling with. What we're trying to do is tell you that this is an unusual requirement and that it's an expensive requirement. We can do it. Audit firms around the state can do this. But what we tried to tell the audit committee, LFO, and this committee now is that it's a very expensive process to go through. I think you need to understand that the management letters you got that talked about some problems with the boards were done as a under the financial audit, which would be done routinely whether Senate Bill 546 had passed or not.
Can I follow up on
this? Yes,
if I may, House Bill 3453, after all this bookkeeper talk, which I don't understand, and bean counting, they will still have to be audited with the state system as we know it, like the Board of Clinical Social Workers and everybody else. They will still have to go through Ways and Means and have their budgets approved by Ways and Means like everybody else?
Madam Chair, Representative Montgomery, they will still be audited as every other board would be audited, but they, as I understand it, you haven't removed the requirement, the other parts of the bill that took them out of the state process.
So may I
all right.
So you're saying they won't go through Ways and Means?
Right.
I'm opposed.
I think
to
that's true.
They need
true.
To go through Ways and Means.
I'm sure. Yeah. If I could ask, John, Senate Bill 546 from last time, was there a sunset on that?
Yes, there was.
And when is that?
The sunset is June 30, 2001. Senate Bill 1127, which is now in the legislative process, proposes to remove that sunset and to make the status permanent. And if I could please address Representative Montgomery's comment regarding the budget. 3453 doesn't have any impact at all on whether or not they go through the budget process. Senate Bill 546, the predecessor, is what removed them from the budget process. And so 3453, as it's currently written, only addresses the audit requirements.
Madam Chair, for the record, that's why I tried to kill it on the floor and didn't succeed and voted no, and I'm adamantly opposed to it. You can't be fish or fowl. If they don't want to be in state government, that's fine. Go form your own little outfit out there and stay away from us. If they want to be part of state government, but they don't want to live by the rules of everybody else.
All right.
Yeah.
Further discussion?
Yeah. and I was opposed to the bill last session too, and basically what we have here is a case where people wanted to have some independent status, and we imposed a higher standard on them for the privilege of having that status, and now they're coming back and saying, we don't want that higher standard anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a real philosophical problem with us as a legislature allowing an entity to exist and then not having oversight over it, and this removes some of that. So, you know, if they want to be semi-independent, then they need this higher level of accountability.
So you are opposed to the...
Yes, ma'am, I am.
All right. Representative Knope?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Latimer, you mentioned the fact that these, I guess, all five boards had trouble coming up with a financial statement, and you had to create one for them. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Knope, it was and it may have been a misunderstanding, but it was our understanding that the boards who did have, contract with an outside CPA firm to help them put together their accounting system, that CPA firm was also going to create financial statements. So when we contracted with the auditor to audit the agencies, we thought they were going in to audit already prepared financial statements. Well, they hadn't been prepared, so that the auditor had to help them prepare the financial statements and then audit them.
Follow up?
Yes.
Do all other boards have to have financial statements, or is this just unusual, this group of five?
Madam Chair, Representative Knope, yes, they all do.
You're speaking of an outside firm, and I believe that you mentioned it was Marina McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
I need to declare for the record that I had a business relationship with that firm from 1986 through 1993. I oppose the bill, please.
All right. I will point out we have self-audit that you have all received in accordance, I guess, with the bill as it now stands, or statute as it now stands.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, that was done only under agreement with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. The law still requires, this bill only deals with the audit requirement. They would still be audited, but not to the extent that Senate Bill 546 required.
Mm-hmm.
So they will still be audited, and if this bill doesn't pass, they will contract with somebody to do these audits.
All right. I believe we have a constitutional problem here, if I'm counting correctly.
Seriously.
A serious one. So at this point, I think that we'll be unable to go further with a work session and declare that the bill has failed. I'm willing to take account if you need it, but I think it's pretty obvious that the vote is not there. Thank you very much for coming forward, and that closes the work session on House Bill 3453.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. All right. Now we have... we'll open the hearing on House Bill 3425. Excuse me, work session. Thank you, Pat. And we have heard this bill before as well, rather recently. So, Pat, you have some comments here?
Madam Chair, committee members, yes, you did hear House Bill 3425 fairly recently. It was income tax day, to be exact. Originally, the bill had some provisions that are no longer relevant since we have Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 2 amendments, which I sent around to you and also a hand in gross bill, restores current statutes for the statutes that are related to fees, purses, unclaimed winnings, and bonding. What remains in the bill is Section 4. You also have in, at your place today, a fiscal statement, but the fiscal statement was on the original bill. So only the last, the last paragraph of that statement is relevant at this point. And it says the impact of Section 4 is indeterminate inasmuch as the multi-jurisdictional simulcasting and interactive wagering totalizer hubs are not operating in Oregon at this time, and it is not known when they may be. Revenue, should they be received under this section, would be distributed one-third to the general fund and two-thirds to the Oregon Racing Commission.
All right. Thank you. I think that we have, Mike, did you
Mike
have anything
and,
further?
And Brad.
Yes, there's Brad. Oh, if you'd like to come forward and say a few words to these amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, for the record, Mike Dewey, Multnomah Greyhound Park. Brad Higby also with Multnomah Greyhound Park.
I didn't have to move my lips to say that, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you.
The bill, as committee administrator explained, would we have asked to withdraw the amendments that deal with the tax of 1.6% to 1%, so there is not a fiscal impact as we have the status quo. And also, we have withdrawn the amendment to have the unclaimed winning tickets go to the two commercial tracks, so there is no fiscal on that. At the hearing on Thursday, what was necessary was a technical amendment dealing with bonding, in that we were no longer dealing with the statute on unclaimed winning tickets, and inadvertently that was not actually restored in the statute. So that is why I think the bill had to come back to you, and basically then we are only dealing with Section 4 that deals with the hub, if you will. The committee administrator gave you all of the words, but I can't remember those. And so we are now dealing with the distribution of the receipts from, if you will, the processing center for wagers that would come into Oregon and then go out to the various tracks throughout the United States. We have already created in statute the hub. It is now the distribution of the revenues. And as I said earlier, last week, what we are attempting to do is use racing revenues to help the racing industry, to mitigate the impacts of video lottery and casinos, and we think this is a worthwhile endeavor. And as I said before, so-called hub, there is a real opportunity that it would be located through the alliance, a racing alliance in Oregon. We are the first state to pass legislation of this type, and the proponents or the folks that are involved in this would like to locate it in Oregon if certain things fall into place.
And so this is a proactive amendment here, and endeavor.
Yeah. If we go back just for a second, what we had done two sessions ago was pass a bill pertaining to video lottery monies, and then of course last session was a mitigation fund. Both of those bills were vetoed, and this is basically new money, so we're not attempting to take any money from the lottery or the general fund. So this would be new money.
Representative Gardner?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to move the Dash 2 amendment.
All right. I have a discussion.
Yeah, I have a question.
This is discussion time.
Good. If you receive funds once the hub is operating, will they be subject to audits and a view of how those are and that kind of thing? There is oversight.
Yes, Madam Chair, there would be through the Racing Commission. There's no question that they would, one, promulgate rules, and part of the rules would be if there is a distribution of funds, how those funds are spent. They would have to be spent for specific purposes.
And if it looks like there are, like, just tons of money coming in here, because I have a feeling that there probably will be, if we wish to change the allocation distribution, we can do that.
The legislature obviously could do that. Again, we're talking about distributing two-thirds and one-third of nothing at this point in time.
Yeah.
And again,
I don't know how big deal that is.
Yeah, it we don't think it's going to be in the first year's very significant amount of money. So this is not a panacea, but it is potentially new money.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further comments? All right. We're
ready
to leave, and we have Representative Gardner has moved the dash to amendment, House Bill 3425. Any objections? Hearing none, the dash two amendments are moved. Chair to move the bill.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3425 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Gardner moves House Bill 3425 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Gardner, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Cano?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Lowe? Representative Montgomery?
Aye.
Chair Logan?
Aye. House Bill 3425 has received the majority of votes and declared passed. And Representative Gardner, would you care to carry this bill?
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much. That closes the work session on House Bill 3425.
That's true.
I would like post physics here. All right. We'll open a hearing on House Bill 3501.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move 3501 to the floor.
Excuse me, I think I said hearing and I meant work session.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're already
rocked. New amendments and all right. We're getting all kinds of new amendments here. We're going to need some explanation of them. Do you want to do that, or would you prefer
I've
the...
only just now seen them.
All right.
Here I have no clue.
All right.
But we do have well, John Brenneman here.
All right. We have Mr. Brenneman.
All right.
All right. Why don't you just come up? You can sign later, Cindy, and just give your name for the record here at the desk.
Why didn't sign?
All right. Well, you can both sign afterward. We'll just keep this moving.
Madam Chair, is this the first we've known of the dash two, dash three, and dash four amendments?
Yes.
Presented at a work session?
Need another two down here.
That's where it is.
Yeah, thank you. Better be good.
Madam Chair,
right,
members of the committee, I'm John Brenneman. I represent the Oregon Funeral Directors. And Cindy Potter is to my left, and she represents Mortuary and Cemetery Board. If you'll remember last week, we came to you with 3501, and there was one, a dash one amendment that we couldn't agree on at that point, and we were talking about the major issue of transporting human remains back to a bordering state and trying to do it with some efficiency and to have a registration of persons out of state that would come in and be able to do that. So what we had prepared after meeting with legislative council last Friday, the dash two amendments are the consensus issues agreed upon by OFDA and the board. Within that, it gives this limited privilege of an out-of-state funeral service professional being able to be registered in Oregon and be able to pay a registration fee and to pick up a body and take the remains back to the state. It also added an issue on reciprocity licensing of individuals who practice in another state. In this case, if it includes in there, in both the, or all three of the amendments, it includes a provision that if a person has practiced 4 years in another state, the board can or may waive the provision in Oregon law that an associate of arts, 2-year associate of arts degree is required for licensing. And those are the basics of the Dash 2 and the things we agreed upon. And Cindy and I have been arguing about whether or not it should be a renewable program. In my version, Dash 2, it doesn't allow for any renewability of the registration. It does say that it expires when the firm is sold, so the new owner would have the responsibility of coming, making an application again. My associations in Washington, Idaho, if you'll recall, I passed out at the last hearing a request from them to keep it simple and to keep it a one-time registration and not to make it renewable. Washington, as an example, is currently in the process of writing their laws to allow our professionals to go in to the state of Washington and pick up bodies and bring them back. And so I think that if we keep it non-renewable, that we avoid having any type of border war or retaliation from Washington or Idaho people. Also, in all three versions of the amendments, you'll find there's a provision that other states have to have similar laws to ours in order for them to comply with Oregon law. They have to have similar laws in place so that allows our people to go into their state. That's the basics of Dash 2, and Dash 3 and Dash 4 additionally have the renewability of the license, which is the board has requested.
Can you explain what you mean by the renewability a little bit?
You want to do it? Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Chair Loken, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Potter, and I'm the executive director of the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board. What the board strongly supports in this, we've agreed on all the other issues. The only difference of opinion that we have is that we feel it's important to renew these certificates every 2 years so we can maintain integrity in the in the files in the office, because information on any kind of registration changes on a regular basis. Ownership changes, individuals working at the facility change. The way we have attempted to keep this simple is by doing it every 2 years instead of every year, maintaining a biennial license situation, and to keep the fees very modest so as not to create a hardship on anyone. And it would only be the facilities instead of individuals. So it greatly reduces the number of individuals that would actually have to get a certificate of registration in order to perform these functions in Oregon. So we've kept it to the facilities, we've kept it to biennial, and we've kept the fees modest. We feel that in order to maintain integrity in the certification files, registration files, we have to have a compelling reason for people to provide changes in information, and the renewal process does that. It requires them to renew by a certain date and to provide any changes that may have occurred in that establishment, that information to the board. We've had experience with a one-time registration. It's been very unsuccessful. It's created some real administrative nightmares for our office. The things that have happened is that the information becomes obsolete over a very short period of time. The board is unable to purge the files and get rid of the ones that are no longer accurate, because it's basically a lifetime registration. The file cabinet with this particular program are filling up and creating storage problems for the board, and monitoring the group is virtually non-existent because of the inaccuracy of the information.
So, Representative McHenry.
Thank you. I don't quite totally grasp the whole thing. I've been very supportive. In fact, I carried every one of your bills last session, so I've been very supportive. My question is, do they need a license? Let's just use Hood River for an example. They need a license to go from Parkdale to pick up a body.
Parkdale's in Washington.
In Oregon.
Chair Loken, Representative Montgomery, he doesn't require a license, but he could send his his license covers, if he wants to have a first call company go get it, then his license would cover his first call company.
Maybe if I rephrase the question.
All right.
If the, wherever you are, as bordering cities, we live on both sides of the river, if you don't need something to do it in Oregon, is this creating something you need to do in another state that we don't have to do in Oregon? I'm phrasing my question wrong, I know. If I keep using Rick Aikens, the local mortician in my district, I didn't have to know it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand my question? Are we creating another license for these people that they have to buy to do something they're already doing within our given state, I guess is a better way to phrase it.
Chair Loken, Representative Montgomery, people do have to have a license in Oregon to act as a funeral service practitioner. And essentially what we're doing is we're opening the borders and we're letting people from out of state come in and do things that previously only licensed Oregon funeral service practitioners have been allowed to do. It's also kind of precedent setting in that I don't think there are very many states anywhere that are allowing this kind of activity. So we're pioneering something that's relatively new.
So if I may just follow up, so in essence, and, you know, kind of a morbid subject to talk about, but it's letting the people from Washington take business away from the people from Oregon without paying a fee then, in essence.
Chair Loken, Representative Montgomery, more than likely, the business may already have been in Washington. In terms, it could have been somebody who dies in Oregon that had an arrangement in Washington. So essentially what we're saying is, okay, you Washington folks don't have to wait to pick up this body until the death certificate in Oregon has been filed. We're saying essentially, if you have a certificate of registration, you can come across the border and take this body out and then file the Oregon death certificate. We've never allowed a non-licensed, I mean, the law has not previously allowed a non-Oregon licensed person to file an Oregon death certificate. We're going to be essentially allowing a Washington state person to file an Oregon death certificate. And that's what the certificate of registration is for that we're developing here. What will happen is if the reason we want the renewability, another reason is if there's a problem with that Washington state person in terms of how he fills out his forms, how he handles human remains, the board then has the authority to revoke that certificate of registration for inappropriate behavior or conduct. Without the renewability, we may not have all the information that we need on that person in its current form, so that we could, for example, draft notices, write orders, consent orders, or whatever it is we may need to do from a regulatory standpoint to enforce Oregon's laws. And that's one of the reasons why we think the renewability is important.
All right, Representative Tenille.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, you know, if Oregon was king of the world, as the director of Titanic stated that he was, I think this might be okay, but my concern is that we have neighbors, and we have neighbors that are sort of equal partners, and I'm a little bit concerned here that we're doing something that they're not going to do, or that ultimately they might want to impose upon our folks because we've imposed it upon theirs. In other words, we're going to start getting into a little bit of a heated debate between states. Have you talked with the other states about what you're planning to do, and are they in favor of this, or are they going to do this to Oregon folks?
Chair Loken, Representative Snow, I'm not sure what they're planning to do. They have another they're not in legislative session right now. They go into session next year. Theirs is over. So I would assume that they may plan to do something similar to what Oregon is proposing. I really don't know.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
Well, I would suggest to you that undoubtedly they will if we impose a restriction that they don't have. And it sounds like from, or at least from my understanding of what you said so far, is that all the states are basically going for the same thing, which is a one-time registration. Is that right?
Representative Loken, Chair Knopf, I'm not sure what they will be going for. However, I think that if they were to impose the same requirements on Oregon, And if it's only the facilities, and if the facilities are only required to do it biennially, and if the fees are modest, it shouldn't be a hardship on the Oregon folks any more than I think it's going to be a hardship on the out-of-state people.
Can Mr. Brenneman add anything to that?
All right, we're still... we have another question here, and then I'd like to...
Okay. Well, I'm assuming since John said the dash T's were his, the three and fours are the board's, and there is the three specific differences in the threes and fours. Would you like to address those and tell me which one you prefer?
Excuse me, are you saying that three and four are yours, then?
Chair Loken, Representative Cruzzi, actually, we've decided to stay with the dash three amendment because four is not, there was only one change from between three and four, and four is not drafted the way we would have wanted it, and we've decided that it's not critical to the issues that we're facing right now, so we would prefer to rely upon dash three amendments for the board's request to the committee to approve the dash three.
A couple follow-ups on it.
All right, President Cruz.
And so, except for the renewal, there's no difference between the twos and threes, and except for that specific reference, you would support either one.
Chair Loken, Representative Cruz, the only difference between two and three is the renewability of the certificate. That's correct.
How often does this occur? I mean, I could see from a perspective of if you get licensed, you can go retrieve a body from another state, and it happens once in a blue moon, and so you'd be being asked to keep submitting money for something that may or may never happen. But let's say, for example, that you as an operator in Washington decide you're not going to keep paying money because you never have any of your people die in Oregon, and then suddenly one does, and because you haven't wanted to keep chewing all of this bureaucratic red tape, you decide at that point in time, you better get a license so you can go get that body. How long would that take?
Chair Loken, Representative Cruz, it would probably take a week or two weeks.
Okay, this is a little bit time sensitive on body retrieval, I would think. So, I guess my point here is, you know, if we're kind of doing something that, as a courtesy, I mean, I understand the need for a level of regulation, Madam Chair. I'm just not sure that requiring biennial reporting, biennial license payment that somebody would do just so they would have the ability to do something that might not happen really makes a whole lot of sense.
Right. I think we were going to hear from Mr. Brenneman, but perhaps this is the point.
Madam Chair, some of the issues that were raised. John Brenneman, again, for the record. My indications from talking to people in Washington, they're going for a one-time registration up there and about $25 to register Oregon people. Frank Akins, one of Representative Montgomery's constituents, was brought up, and probably Washington practitioners prior to the fall were coming across and filing the certificate of death and taking the body back home without a problem. I know now what they're doing because of the AG ruling is the Washington practitioner probably has a working relationship with Frank Akin for him to help out with the paperwork and file that death certificate so they can remove the body back to the state of Washington. I'm guessing that'd be the case. And so I'm sure they've already been working across the borders together. And I think that if you pass the dash two, it makes it simple. You can continue to work cooperatively. And perhaps Frank would be faced with biennial registration relicensing requirements if we impose them in Oregon. My guess is they'd impose them in Washington. I just can't imagine that not occurring.
Representative Knoll, did you have another question?
Well, I have sort of a suggestion. Since this is a new program, and they're asking, the only difference between the two right now is that they're asking that it be renewable every 2 years. So I've got good news. We come back into session 2 years from now.
That's good news.
And if and if it's not working then, or if Washington has imposed a further restriction that they might want to meet, then we can probably address it at that time. Or the possibility exists that our board can talk with the other boards and come to some sort of agreement by which they're going to have a renewability or something of that nature. But at this point, I don't think, in my view, that I want to have Oregon shoot across the bow of two of our neighbors or three or whatever at this time. So I'm going to support the dash twos and will not support the dash threes.
Any other discussion? Any other comments from... We have another lady. Would you like to come to the witness stand, Dan, and identify yourself? And then we will proceed with whatever we're going to do after this.
Thank you, Chair Loken. Chair Loken and members of the panel, my name is Diane Bassett Pohl, and I am a member of the Mortuary Cemetery Board. I was... I've been on the board for about a year now. I have been with this industry since 1984, and I know I have been through a lot of changes in the industry, and the reason I became involved was because I was a victim of something that happened in 1984. So I became extremely interested in the mortuary cemetery industry board and how things work in the state of Oregon. What I see from the board's recommendation of the renewability is that administratively it makes sense. I realize that nobody wants to pay a fee or go through renewability, but we all do on our driver's license, our car license, and many other licenses that allow us to operate in the state of Oregon. I don't see that this will be anything that is not a controllable thing for Washington or Idaho. I think there's going to be a lot more business done across the borders once this whole thing is passed. And I did want to support the board decision on the renewability. And like I say, it's from an administrative standpoint. We have a situation right now where pre-need salesmen are not required to renew their license. And so we have a thousand pre-need people that the department or staff has absolutely no idea if they're still in business, if they're still working, and it's a paperwork nightmare. So that's what I wanted to testify on, is that from an administrative standpoint, it makes sense to have some kind of, not control necessarily, but some kind of information that's viable every 2 years. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. You've heard the comments here in this work session. Further discussion? Is there a move? Yes.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the dash two amendment.
All right. Dash twos have been moved for House Bill 3501. Is there any objection? If not, the dash two amendments have been approved. All right. And do you wish also then?
Madam Chair, I'll move House Bill 3501 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Gardner has moved House Bill 3501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I believe that was with the provision of not the carriers on it.
All right. No. I will remember that.
We have a center carrier for the bill.
That's Fish's carrier. All right. Will a clerk call a roll?
Madam Chair, before the roll call.
Yes.
Hi. Representative Gardner.
Can we hold just a moment, please?
I think Representative points well taken, and if this does need some more work next session, I think it should be brought up. If it's broke, we should fix it. and I think that's
That is a good point. Yes, I thank you for that, because that is a good point, and I certainly encourage both sides to work together, continue to work together on that and resolve that. Hopefully we don't have to deal with it again next session, but it's big. Thank you. All right.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Snow?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Montgomery?
Aye.
Representative Pearson?
Aye.
Chair Logan?
Aye. All right. House Bill 3501 received a majority of the votes, declared passed. And do I have a volunteer who would like to carry this bill? Representative Cruz, would you like to carry the bill?
Okay.
Overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
If you have suggestions for visual aids, let me
know.
No. I'll definitely try to help you.
Yeah, I was going to say, Representative Montgomery is an expert on these bills.
Right here.
Thank you. The House Bill 3501 for session is closed. All right, we have one more.
I know.
We're doing all right on the time here. And we'll now open a work session on House Bill 3035. And I don't think we have big surprises on this one. Let's see. We do have an amendment, but we did not call this a hearing, so we still call it a work session. And we'll talk about the new amendment. Representative Crook is not. Representative Trump is not here. It's his bill, but I see that we have legislative counsel with us. So perhaps, Pat, do you want to bring us up to date on this amendment, and we'll proceed.
In your Madam Chair and committee members, in your discussion at the last hearing on this bill, the -1 amendments were offered, and it was felt at that time that some further refinement was needed to those amendments, and that has been accomplished with the -2 amendment. It changes the way that committees would deal with any proposed adoption, amendment, or repeal. And now reads that upon the request of a member of the assembly or of a person who would be affected by these changes, the committees receiving notice would review that proposal and comment on that, submit those comments to the agency. And that would be made a part of the record.
And this would be 49 days?
The 49 days would stay in as
before the effective date.
Yes, that would be done before the effective date. It would still be
in the
post of the final adoption of
the
any
final
change.
Adoption. Okay.
No.
All right.
The 49 days before adoption, I kind of got lost on the left turn here, or right turn, whichever it was. That is nothing to do with the amendment, I don't think. -2 amendment.
No, not with the -2 amendment.
Okay, so my understanding is if they go ahead and pass something, and the 49 days is a different thing. And then if a member or an affected party, no matter who they may be, can then appeal to the committee, and with due notice and due time, that can be brought before the committee. I would suggest that maybe not in here, but on the record, for those that are coming back next session, this could be a horrific pile of stuff. I support it. I think it's a good idea. But if it's too much, then we need to go to the drawing board.
To review this, are you suggesting a sunset? We'd have to.
Well, you know, we in sunsets. We never sunset anything, so we might as well put a sunset clause on it.
Mr. Cable, would you like to comment at all on this -2 amendment?
Madam Chair, my preference would be no, but if there, I believe Ms. Wick has adequately summarized what Dash 2 amendments do, but if the committee has any questions, I'd be pleased to answer them.
Okay. Discussion? All right, Representative Piercy.
I'm just concerned as a good representative about the workload and what kind of what that would mean in terms of workload and what that would mean in terms of additional costs. Can you
have
talk about that?
We have a fiscal here.
Where is, I guess I'm missing that.
$200,000.
$200,000.
Where do you see that? You see a $200,000 fiscal?
I have the Dash 1 fiscal statement.
Old data. I think so, because I don't have anything like a $200,000 fiscal.
Madam Chair, we're in work session,
yes,
please, and we
yes
can discuss back and
we
forth.
We can discuss.
Can I jump in with Representative
yes
Piercy here?
Please.
I think there is one word that I look at and see very concerned about on the Dash 2 amendment, line 23, the word shall. That means the committee shall
right
review every cockamamie idea somebody comes up with. I think the word may, that they could be selected, so they'll be Democrats and Republicans. They can make a student decision of whether they will, whether they shall. So may be a better word in there, and I'll look to our legal counsel for advice.
Which line?
Line 23 on the Dash 2 amendment.
All right.
That you've got the hand of growth thing there, and I
yeah
have the Dash 2 amendments in my hand. I'm sorry.
Line 23 of the amendment. Shall review. Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Montgomery, if you change shall to may, the bill is largely unnecessary because the committees already have the discretion to review the actions of executive department agencies. As drafted, this would require the committees to review rules upon the request of a member or upon the request of an interested constituent. In our office, we get individual requests to review rules either from constituents or from members at the rate of not more than about one every 2 weeks.
Madam Chair.
All right.
Into the Dash 2. I wasn't aware they had the authority to do that. They don't do it anyhow most of the time. But secondarily, on the Dash 2 amendments, if I may, page 2, line 3, it says that the committee shall have the authority to repeal, yes, adopt, amend, or repeal, R-E-P-E-A-L, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. The committees at this time do not have that authority.
Comment. Submit their comments on proposed
document or appeal
from Madam Chair, Representative Montgomery, all that that does is explain that the committee will be commenting on an agency's decision to repeal a rule. This does not grant and could not grant the Legislative Assembly the authority to repeal a rule.
So, Madam Chair, I hate to dominate this part of your group. One more question.
All right.
So okay, all this committee's going to do is look at it and say, hey, that's a bad idea. Go back to work.
Madam Chair, Representative Montgomery, I'd hate to presume what a committee would or would not choose to do given a particular
member. All this week, going to say, this is a good idea. Go back to work. The point is the committee has no authority to do anything but look at it. And one of these other warm, fuzzy things we're doing. We either put teeth in something or don't waste our time on it.
And I guess that's why a shall was there. Is that Representative Cruz,
yeah,
did you help with this?
If we could do what Representative Montgomery would like to do, it'd be wonderful, but we get into some constitutional issues there because this is the division between legislative and executive here, and we can't. All we can do is recommend, and I will say that we did some of that in the Human Resources Interim Committee with the Board of Pharmacy over some rules they were promulgating, and we called them in often enough, and they did kind of modify where they're wanting to go just based on conversation, which can happen, but really the reality was, if they didn't want to listen to us, they didn't have to, and we'd had to come back during session and do legislation to override rule, which would be our only real remedy on something like that. But for a legislative committee to have the conversation with the agency or board who is writing the rules can be effective in getting modification, as it should be.
Prior to the adoption of the rule.
But and you can do it after adoption, too, I suppose, but then they'd have to go through a whole other rule writing thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But this, excuse me, I will get to you. This is at least 49 days before the effective date that there is notice.
Madam Chair,
yes.
That part of the bill is deleted by the dash two amendment.
Oh, it is. All
There's
right.
already a provision in statute providing for the agencies to provide notice of proposed rules to interim or session committees.
All right.
Excuse me. Pat has Greg, do you have a copy of the dash two amendments with you?
I do not.
Because the dash two amendments does say insert at least 49 days before the effective date.
Reverend Piercy, you were.
Yeah, I just wanted to.
Yes.
Madam Chair, we have a very important visitor here. I would ask
right.
that maybe the representative could introduce him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Today we have with me in honor of Take Your Daughter to Work Day, my six-year-old daughter, Susan.
She is. Welcome, Susan. We're really pleased to have you here. And I know it's pretty confusing to listen to all this discussion, but, you know, we're all up here not quite arguing, but talking about
our two.
Things very progressively.
Well, at least you didn't have to hear the prior bill.
Is Susan, while we're getting some information here, is this your first visit down here? Do your dad is? No?
No.
That's good.
I stand correct. There is a 49-day requirement for submission to the committees.
All right. So that remains.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that does give an earlier notice than is now.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Uh-huh. I think that was part of the purpose of this bill to begin with, was to, isn't that correct, President Cruz, to give enough notice prior to allow a committee to have the time to respond to
it. Madam Chair, I know Representative Pearson.
Yes, and I'm not ignoring that.
I think the genesis of this is that you know, agencies do go through public hearing process, and which is appropriate. Sometimes the feeling is that those are just pro forma shows to a degree. They've already made up their mind, and they're going through that process just for the sake of the legal requirement of it. And this would give a citizen, as well as a legislator, another avenue of remedy to at least make sure that their concerns were addressed before adoption of rule.
All right. If I might continue with that, if we look at line 20 on the amendment, it says, upon the request of a member of the legislative assembly. So it doesn't say that we're looking at every proposed rule. So it's not the massive amount of the bills that we pass sometimes that I think shouldn't all be passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you think this will actually change current practice?
Madam Chair, Representative Piercy, if this bill were to become law, I think that some of the interim committees would spend more time than they already do visiting with executive department agencies about rules that the agencies propose to adopt and whether the committees considered those rules to be wise.
And I notice, unless this has changed, and you can inform me of this, Madam Chair, but it, on the fiscal, the last sentence says, to the extent this measure establishes a workload beyond the levels assumed in the assembly and the LAC budget, or required by cumulative enactment of other bills, additional resources may be required, which sort of leaves this, I mean, this is a big wide open thing about what this would cost in terms of resources, depending on how active those committees might be.
Madam Chair, Representative Piercy, yes, that's my understanding of the purpose of putting that in the fiscal impact statement, that the Legislative Administration Committee believes that it can handle some additional work on behalf of committees, whether session or interim, without requiring additional resources. But at a certain point, after the legislature passes a certain number of bills, the Legislative Administration Committee is going to have to add additional staff. They just can't pinpoint which bill that is in the process, which is why that statement's in there.
Representative Lowe.
Colleagues, on the having dealt with some rulemaking, you know, I used to do a lot of child support enforcement, and I noticed that whenever administrative agency wants to promulgate rules, it's very easy for a citizen to have involvement in that process. You simply request a notice anytime a rule is being made, and the agency itself under the Administrative Procedure Act has a responsibility of giving you notice of any rulemaking going on, what the proposed rule is, what it would do, and you have an opportunity to comment. And many of the agencies also have they have hearings. So there is tons of opportunity for citizen involvement already in the rulemaking process. This seems a little, you know, like second bite at the apple.
Right. Comment that, yes.
I'm just,
another one. You go ahead. I have another comment.
Madam Chair, Representative Lawyer right there, is there is lots of opportunity built into the system, but that doesn't explain why many times we end up with rules that stray so very far from the intent of legislation, and we do have that, and that's not an incredibly rare occasion that does happen, and I have been involved as a private citizen before and gone to rulemaking hearings and have felt that nobody was really listening. They were there just for the purpose of fulfilling the legal requirement of having a hearing. And so I think it's appropriate if we can have another avenue to allow legislators or citizens to make sure that their concerns are addressed. But I think it behooves us to allow that avenue to happen. And Ms. Chamoff is right. A legislative committee can do this now. I mean, we have the ability, and we do this. So, in my opinion, this is more for citizens than for us to have access to that part of the system.
I think one of the things, though, that Mr. Chamoff said is of interest, that there will be more attention given by committees to the rules that are being, and that's really our purpose as legislators, I think. It's not just passing a bill, it's following up on it. And I know from some committee work that I did during the interim that it's really, really important to continue to have some oversight over the bills that are passed. I think this would give us an opportunity to have that and be able to scrutinize more carefully what is happening, because I think as legislators now, this is my opinion, as legislators, I think that our responsibility lies not just in passing the bill, but making sure it's enacted in the way we want it to be and following the intent. But having said that, discussion, sunset came up. I think we could, I would certainly think that would be something we could conceptually add to this if we felt that was necessary.
Madam Chair, sunset would be nice, but there again, looking up and down there, there's three or four of them going to be back next session. If they want a sunset, they could put it to bed then. The sunset clause does make it so you do review it again. That's the one advantage. But there again, as Mike Lachey, and I'll repeat myself, we never sunset anything around here anyhow. But it does make you look at it twice.
True. That's true. All right. Do I have an amendment to move the dash 2?
Madam Chair, I would move the dash 2 amendment 3035.
Discussion. And I will add this thought. There is some confusion, I guess, about the cost. Now, what is the pleasure of the committee? We could send it to Ways and Means, but I don't know if they would have any more. Anything that's over 50,000 goes to Ways and Means, but we don't know that.
If, in fact, the report here that our staff has passed on to us is correct, and my assumption it is, and I'm sure it is, mm-hmm. It doesn't appear to be that expensive if we're having seven meetings, so I don't think you make the $50,000 mark.
Yeah.
So it's no sense to send it to Ways and Means. They got enough work down there. And we got to get a school budget out here sometimes, so we don't want to
have
more.
That's for sure. We don't want to slow that up.
Yeah.
We want to go home by it long before August.
God, I hope so.
We have dash twos have been moved. Any objections? There is. I could. We can call the roll. Yes.
Madam Chairman, I'm very nervous about the wide open fiscal. Mm-hmm. That's the part. I love the part about continuing our responsibility to scrutinize and just to do our jobs. And I like citizen involvement a lot. They have access to this process not only through directly through the agency rulemaking, but also through us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our job,
right?
And we should be doing our job, but I'm very nervous about the system.
If I could speak to that, for the most part, as I would envision this, we would be reviewing these rules during the regular interim committee meetings. So I think that's what Mr. Chamoff was referring to. If this would call for additional committee meetings, there could be an increased cost, but that's purely speculative at this point. If indeed legislative council is getting an average of one request every 2 weeks from citizens, this isn't going to have that major an impact because the interim committees are, as we are planning now, probably going to be meeting on a more regular basis during this next term than they did in the last. So if indeed we were having monthly interim committee meetings, this would just be part of their agenda at their regular meeting.
To review a rule or two or whatever would have been brought up.
But nothing, right. Madam Chair, in current law stops us from doing that at this point in time.
True. No.
Madam Chair, I just feel like it's unnecessary.
Would the clerk call a roll?
Representative Close, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative Cano?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Probably so.
They don't allow probably.
Not even definite maybe.
No orange.
Representative Pearson?
No.
Chair Loken?
Aye. I believe we received the constitutional number of votes to pass the amendment.
We do.
All right. Do we have a motion to move House Bill 3035 as amended to the floor?
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I would move House Bill 3035 as amended to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Discussion? All right. I think we'll call a roll on that one.
Representative
Close,
how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative
Cano?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
No.
Representative Montgomery?
Aye.
Representative Pearson?
No.
Chair Loken?
Aye. All right, having received the majority of votes, House Bill 3035 is passed. And Representative Cruz, you helped us with this. Representative Knopf is not here. or Krupp is not here, so would you carry, be the carrier?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair.
All right.
I like non-controversial.
All right. And again, all right, Tuesday, that closes the work session on House Bill 3035, and we got through our bill today. Appreciate your help on accomplishing that. For those who were not here, we will have 8 o'clock meeting, and I would appreciate everyone setting aside that time promptly, because we're going to have a lot of work and we have to have a quorum in order to get it done.
Sheriff, you mentioned the homework we need to do here.
Oh, thank you very much. Pat, are you aware of the... I won't have you to explain that. We're supposed to evaluate our committee administrator. So would you please... Please fill this out and we'll see that it gets to the right person, or you can see that it gets to Jim Stembridge, and I think they're in a hurry.